Welcome to the Island Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Second episode for this beautiful Wednesday after taking Tuesday off. And a guest for you, my friend, your friend, Ethan Sherwood-Strauss.
Thank you for having me on. You're really making up for that episode you missed. I saw that people they get mad. They get mad on the internet when they don't have their EOB to download.
When you have the EOB pod as a staple of your day and you don't get to hear these dulcet tones throwing snark at you, that'll throw your day off.
Oh, yeah. And snark right now, there's a premium on
Oh, my God.
It came out, Smarm is bad, Snark is in, so you're doing the right thing by going Snarky.
Yeah, the Snark, I mean, I've gone Smarmy before, but the Snark is where it's at. I feel like I'm in the Silicon Valley of Snark right now.
You know, I would really go the Smarm route, but you have to be in a position of privilege for that, and I drove to Oracle Arena last night in a 97 Ford Escort station wagon, so that's not happening.
Well, I mean, if that's not privilege, I don't know what is.
Yeah, well, I was privileged to have a car that didn't break down since I started using it in high school. That's one way to view it.
That's true. You get some good miles on that.
I think over 100,000, you know?
Yeah, that's huge. Look at you.
It's great. I'm a soccer mom from the 1990s. It's fantastic.
You're Warriors. Looking good with Andre Iguodala back.
Yeah. I'm on the outside. I'm the evil person who dared doubt David Lee. Oh. You know, That's no bueno.
You are his inspiration, it feels like.
Not according to him. After the game last night, he loudly proclaimed after the first question that he doesn't read anything that's said about him, read or care about it, and it was hard not to stifle a cackle.
Here's the thing. That's like when you start talking about a friend of yours, like you saw their ex was so and so, and they're like. Oh yeah, that guy she's seeing. Yeah, I think he's a lawyer. But I don't keep up with her. I don't know anything about like what she's doing.
Translation: I am Facebook stalking 3 hours a day. These guys read about themselves. Oh, especially. Well, I shouldn't say especially David Lee, because I don't know about the other guys. But I did want to raise my hand and go, I have some DMs to prove otherwise.
Oh, look at you dropping bombs.
I don't have to keep people's secrets for them. We don't really know each other well if we haven't agreed to anything. Look, I'm happy for him. I want him to do well, and it's probably not fun to read about people and rumored trades, and it seemed like the trade David Lee boat was gaining some steam. Can a boat gain steam? Can a steamboat gain steam? I don't know enough about that.
I don't think they gain steam. I think they thrive off the steam they can produce.
They just have it.
It's not like getting wind in a sail. Like there's not just steam on a river that you're trying to get pushing you.
Yeah, I only know of the wind in the sails because I'm in Larry Ellison Bay Area yacht racing country. So that's all I know about. I don't know about the steam.
Exactly.
Ask me anything about the sailboats. I got you covered. I just know ports.
What is the jib?
Well, you know, if you have the right cut of it, then you zoom ahead.
No, don't you have to shimmy the jib, or you push the jib, or you, I don't know.
Is it a gib or a jib? I know that's a big debate.
I never know how to pronounce the G's.
It's so difficult. It's so difficult across all cultures, that hard G versus soft G.
It is.
Well, with the Lee thing, he had his best game last night. He was incredible.
He was great.
There was an element of truth to the idea that Iguodala is Lee's defense, because Iguodala comes back and he can perform this Herculean task of guarding Ryan Anderson so Lee doesn't have to. And then Lee goes against Aminu, and I'm just thinking, man, that's not a starter-level player. When you're a wing, when you're an
Twitter
guy, and David Lee is guarding you and you can do nothing.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's such a weird role player. I like him as a role player on your team, but as a starter, I guess it's balanced out against most teams because Anderson stretches the floor, and then that makes, you know, Aminu a cutter and, you know, just a guy who can move without the ball. And he, I don't know. I guess he's good enough, but if David Lee can switch out onto you and you're a wing and there are no repercussions for the Warriors.
I mean, not even switching, just guarding him, and he can't do anything.
Yeah.
It was a reminder that there's just a lot of lackluster, shall we say, talent on that roster that was being propped up by the superstar efforts of Anthony Davis.
Oh, look at you! Got to stop.
What? I do not have to stop. He's great. He's just injury prone.
Yeah.
I do not have to stop. Yeah. But how dare you tell me what to do on your podcast? Yeah, Iguodala kind of fixed everything, and maybe that's a bad thing, because the good thing about losing and failure is that you have to address what's wrong, and you have to get better. And in this case, it seems as though it might paper over certain concerns, because they'll convince themselves they're good enough, because Iguodala will make them good enough, but not necessarily good enough to be, I don't know, title contenders.
Yeah, I actually like that's. I like what you just said there, that it's good to lose because it makes you address the problems. I mean, the bad teams don't address the problems, or maybe they're incapable of addressing the problems, or at least like fixing the problems once they're addressed. But a team like the Warriors going through this early on, you know, yeah, you can peg it all on the Iguodala injury, and a lot of it is that. I still, you know, I think you and I still have huge questions about them scoring off the bench.
Yeah.
And the rotation will get tighter in the playoffs, but I still don't think it addresses that problem. So that's still an issue to me, but for the most part, you can get things kind of on track with Iguodala coming back. But I don't know if that allows you to address the issues of the bench. Or maybe they can't address the issues of the bench.
Well, Spates has shown signs of life, and that's a bad sign too. When that's the guy who is supposed to save your bench. That's the guy.
There was one moment last night where he dribbled the ball into the half court.
Oh, you made a GIF.
I didn't make one. Someone made it for me. I watched that a lot.
Man, there's something so comical about
it.
I don't know why.
He was hopping in excitement as he dribbled the ball up the floor. It was so good.
I love Spates. I love every. He has been awful up until the last two or three games. He's been terrible. Even at, what does he make, $3 million a year? Even at that price, he's been a terrible signing for them. But comedically, he's been an incredible signing for them.
Oh, it's great.
He doesn't have an understanding of what he's supposed to do and when he's supposed to do it. And he's this big guy, but he'll just jack threes randomly or do a Euro step that takes a sundial amount of time to really materialize. I love it. And really, you can feel it in the Oracle crowd that there's this untapped oil well of Spates love in there where they want to play well because he's one of those kind of slightly crazy, maybe unhinged Steven Jackson types that they want to embrace. You know, they can't wait for the Spates to happen. It's just an open question of whether it will.
Right. Yeah. No. He's kind of like their, like a more skilled Mark Madsen type figure.
I've never thought to compare them.
I know it's not okay to snark is in, but cross racial comparisons are not in.
We're an advanced society, but we're not that advanced.
Right.
This isn't France, Zach.
Right.
We're not that progressive.
We're not in a futuristic Tom Cruise movie.
Can we talk about Austin Rivers' shoes?
I said last night they looked like half-dipped Easter eggs.
I said that they looked like a Kim Kardashian handbag or a Paris Hilton handbag.
Yeah.
Like he'd stepped into that and then thought, well, you know, might as well keep walking. You had a great tweet about his game.
I felt bad for him.
Yeah, but you made fun of him very well.
Oh yeah, I'm really good. The snark, it's just so in right now.
Yeah,
but he looked like, I mean, because he got to a point where he was missing layups. He's like, and it wasn't just that he was missing shots; it's that they were kind of going in and out in a weird way, like with this weird side spin, and it just looked like he was the guy who kept dumping money into trying to win a prize at a carnival game, but he couldn't win anything.
Oh, it's a beautiful analogy.
Thank you.
And that was very amusing to me. He sometimes reminds me of the guy on Vine who was just dribbling like crazy and trying to break the floorboards with his dribble. Super confident, but it's just not really convincing. That's what Austin Rivers reminds me of. And what an awkward situation for that team. From what I've heard, Monty Williams, really good friends with Doc Rivers. And at what point does he just call his friend and go, dude, your son, I can't do it anymore.
I still think he can be a good role player. Like
think everybody can be a good role player?
No, I'm out on plenty of guys. No, but I think he has definite skills and definite ways to attack that they have to be developed. I mean, he's one of those guys that, as against the age rule as you are, If there was a rule to keep guys in for 3 years, like him playing at Duke for 3 years was probably the best thing that could have happened for him, right? Like he would have had to learn how to play basketball
instead Maybe. Of
just, because in high school he just got by. Like he was obviously a really great high school prospect, and I think you and I have talked about that before on the podcast of where people have retroactively downgraded how highly he was touted, but he was highly touted.
He was touted. This is going to be the total give me credit for stupid thing I was right about that nobody cared about podcasts because I'm that vain and insecure.
You but are.
I was down on him as a high school prospect. He didn't register a lot of assists, and I was saying, well, for a guard and a guy who projects the point guard size, at the high school level, you should really be racking up those assists, and I wondered if the famous name really played into how highly touted he was, and he might have been, it sounds crazy to say about a high school student, but he might have been overrated back then.
Oh, no, and he probably was. I think, like, his skill set, I mean, he dominated high school, which it's, I don't know, it's such a weird balance because it's like, well, that's the competition. So if he dominates that, there's nothing he can do about that. But at the same time, it's like, yes, he's 17, 18 years old, but he's still playing against high school students who aren't what he is. You know, like he clearly had like this step ahead of them, but that does you absolutely no good once you get to the next level and then the level after that. If that makes sense, you know?
Little Marbury action, though, with the levels. You've seen that, right?
What are you talking about?
You've never seen that? Oh, my God.
I don't even know what you're talking about, so I can't answer whether I've seen it or not. All you said was levels and Marbury.
I'm going to be like, dude, you haven't seen it, dude? Come on, man. You haven't seen that movie? Dude. Well, Marbury was saying that they need to go to another level and another level and another level and another level after that in an interview in which he seemed, shall we say, affected.
Okay. Affected is good. Some other people would probably say drunk or high.
Probably the latter.
Okay.
not accusing, not saying,
no,
you know?
No.
I feel like you could do more of that back in the day where there wasn't an internet where they'd really analyze it. I remember during the We Believe run, there was an interview with Baron Davis and Jason Richardson where if there was more of a social media presence, we really would have been looking into that one.
What about speaking of We Believe, what about your boy Don Nelson and his comments about Monte Ellis?
The background on your Twitter avatar. Oh, yeah. Man, I've read the excerpts of the interview. I need to get to a newsstand and I'm going to tear through that Chris Ballard story.
Yeah.
The quotes. Oh, my God. And just the idea of that guy absolutely chilling in Hawaii, as you'd imagine it, having poker games. Speaking of the state that, you know, Steph and Marbury, the poker games with Willie Nelson and Woody.
And Owen Wilson.
And Owen Wilson, I mean, oh, God, just to be at that poker game, to be at that poker game, Zach,
yeah.
Imagine.
Oh, you could sell tickets for $3,000 to just watch that poker game.
And then you just show up and Don Nelson sleeps through the whole thing.
That was like a lot of Warriors games in 2009.
Oh, yeah. Put his head down in the timeout, close his eyes.
Yeah.
It's funny, though, man. I hated Nelson at the end of that run, but now I kind of miss him. He's just such a – he doesn't take basketball seriously. He's a whimsical presence, and I miss that whimsical presence.
Yeah, I mean, he went through some tragedies, right, like towards the end of his career, and it really just changed him to where he was like, screw this. Like, we're just going to do stuff, and if it works, it works. If not, like, there are more important things in my life that have happened. And I actually kind of appreciated that. I know it's easier to say that when he's – well, he's not coaching my favorite team or the team I'm covering. I know
he's not starting Mikey Moore at center, and
right?
A bunch of guards.
But I get that it's a little easier to have that perspective. But I did kind of enjoy that outlook on it.
Yeah, I enjoyed the honesty and the excerpt quotes that were there where he called Monte a sneaky little bastard.
Yeah, a selfish little bastard.
Selfish little bastard and mocking David Lee's defense. He doesn't care anymore. The coaches, after they retire, they get so insightful and fun. I heard George Karl on the radio recently, and he was talking about how 75% of him roots for the players on Denver, but there's this 25%, and he just went into the whole situation with the management
yeah.
and just kind of unloaded that he said upon getting fired that this was the stupidest mistake. And he's so honest and so interesting. I wish we could get that kind of honesty from coaches while they were coaching. It would make for a better league. Oh God, I can't wait for Popovich when Popovich
retires. Oh God, well I worry that he's going to disappear.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's not going to be. He doesn't seem like a radio interview guy. Like maybe he'll have a book. Maybe he'll write a book of like memoirs of just his career, and it won't be so much about coaching, but it'll just be about life. Like that would be fun, but. I don't know. I don't see him doing the media junket.
No, I don't see that, but I see him being perhaps more illuminating in interviews. It'd be funny if Scott Brooks is just this curse-filled kind of crazy guy after he's done coaching, you know. If he just has a whole different voice, because that dude, most boring coach interview I've ever encountered. It would be good to see some personality from him.
It would. Yeah. He's a little mundane.
He's like a saltine. I'm trying to think. What is he? He's like cardboard. He just evokes something in my mind that's bland.
He's like a watercress cracker without.
Ooh.
I didn't mean that in a racial sense. Well, watercress cracker.
You meant it that way. Well, a little bit. That's the way you meant it.
20%. Without some pate to put on it. There's no cheese. There's no cheese with that watercress.
Yeah, no pate. That's bad times when you're speaking from the point of privilege and smarm. When you
as,
don't have
as
pate,
we are, as we do.
That's when you get snarky.
So, Austin Rivers.
Yes.
No, I think he can be a decent role player. Like, I don't think he's going to be a starter. I don't think he's going to be an all-star. I don't think he'll justify the early hype he had. But I do think there was a workable player there. I really do.
I just disagree. When you're playing at D-League level and you're in those bejeweled shoes, that's just not a good sign, Zach. It's an advanced stat.
It's I will give you that. It's not a great sign.
You can't be wearing those shoes and have a significant NBA future. I'm
no,
sorry.
Not at all.
It's science.
Yeah, no, that's direct science.
It was but back to the Warriors bench. They made a run with Austin Rivers on the court against the Warriors bench.
They did. That was something.
I mean, nobody can dribble. I think this is an underrated NBA skill, is the ability to dribble a basketball. We don't talk about it when assessing teams, that this team can dribble and this team can't. And the Warriors' problem right now, and especially when Iguodala was out, was that nobody other than Steph Curry could dribble a basketball.
Well, and that was the drawback with the Pacers last year, right? Against the Heat, is Paul George was not a good dribbler. George Hill couldn't dribble once you threw a second defender at him. And that just killed them. That's why they were so turnover prone. And this year, I don't know if – I haven't looked to see if they're as turnover prone as they were last year. But at least
middle of the road.
Yeah, but at least Paul George can dribble now.
And Lance Stephenson, he was – he dribbled high. He looked like a seal slapping his flippers at something. There was no control. And now he's and-one mixtape. So suddenly they got dribbling.
I think he is the only and-one sponsored athlete in the NBA right now.
Yeah, you can just yell "Born Ready," and that's perfect for that sort of situation. That's a total and-one mixtape name. But with the Warriors, it's funny because people were criticizing Curry because that's what happens when a team disappoints you. Go to their most prominent player and you start questioning whether or not he's really good, as you well know from being in the Kevin Love situation. It's often totally unfair.
Right.
And he was turnover prone this year, and he gets sloppy with the ball, certainly. But people are going, he needs to cut his turnovers. And I'm thinking, sure, but the team turns it over 33% more when he's not on the floor. So... So even though he's leading the league in turnovers, probably not true now that Kobe's played a few games, but even though Curry's leading the league in turnovers, it's as much that nobody else could dribble a basketball and put a lot of pressure on him to make stuff happen as anything else. And last night there was a possession where he was stymied on a drive two times by Holiday, and finally he goes, okay, and he sees Iguodala there and dumps it down to Iguodala. And it didn't come – nothing came of that possession, but to me it signified how there's so much less pressure on him when, oh, wait, somebody else can dribble and make stuff happen, because really it's an overrated offensive roster consisting of a lot of statues that lack court vision in many ways.
Yeah,
so,
it's as good of a compliment to Steph Curry as Klay Thompson is, the fact that he cannot create off the dribble does – does limit them, and I guess that's why it makes Iguodala's presence so important, because he can dribble. And oh, he almost had the maybe the highlight of the year. He went back between his legs and he almost dunked on Jason Smith. Like that was almost. I mean, Kent Bazemore went running down the baseline as that play was developing. Like he was about 10 feet off the base or off the sideline.
Kent Bazemore is like the valets in those Key and Peele sketches. He's just...
You're very much into Key and Peele. I feel like you reference them a lot.
I like that show. And
I've never really watched it.
People want to sneer at it because it's the heir to the Chappelle Show in some ways, and the Chappelle Show is so cool. Key and Peele will never be as cool as the Chappelle Show was at that moment, and comedy is difficult, and everybody wants to make fun of stuff. Hey, era of snark, as we said. So I just like to say, hey, they have unusual sketches. They do things that nobody else does. That whole football introduction sketch is just but one example. So I'm into the Key and Peele. And
I mean, I've seen a clip here and there, and I like it. I've just never thought to watch it. It's kind of like Tosh.0. I don't know that I've ever sat down or like DVR'd and thought, oh, I'm going to watch Tosh.0 this week. But if it happens to be on before The Daily Show, like, I'll catch a few minutes, and I always enjoy it.
That's another guy who's talented, but people want to tear him down for whatever the reason. Probably because he's manifestly unlikable.
He's kind of a dick, and that's like his thing, right?
Yeah, that's his thing. And that's going to leave yourself open to some criticism.
Yeah.
So I totally understand that. But
and that's the trend, though, with... At least I feel like with like the TV, the comedian to TV cable show, it's like you look at Tosh, you look at Anthony Jeselnik, you look at Amy Schumer, like they're all kind of that same mentality.
Yeah, and you wonder if they're really that mean or they just, that's what they have to do. They have to be that mean. It's quite a contrast from athletes who have to trick us into thinking they're a lot more humble and nicer than they actually are when really they're vicious competitors. And they're not like their presentation to us at all.
Right. Maybe it's like a Bob Saget thing where he was this likable family man on a TV show. But in real life, he's just like this dirty guy.
But don't you feel that Bob Saget, it's like it's contrived. He doesn't actually – he's not like that. He's just trying to sell this contrary image for the shock value.
I kind of feel like he's like that. Why wouldn't he be?
Because there's something contrived about it. I get something fake about it. I can't explain why, Zach. It just doesn't pass the smell test. That's another scientific test, another advanced stat, smell test.
Yeah, smell test it's just below the eye test if we're ranking tests.
It is, literally. It's just below the eye test.
Oh, I had someone throw an eye test at me today Twitter, and I just wanted, like, the eye test is, if you know what you're looking for, the eye test is a good argument.
Yeah, if only the people who said eye tests actually were subjecting the information to the real eye test. The eye test is the best stat. If you really comb through the film and break things down as best you can,
yes.
It's just a painstaking process that essentially nobody who references the eye test actually goes through.
Right, exactly. And it's assuming you know what you're supposed to be looking for. And that's not saying I do. I recognize that I know so much... Or I don't know so much about the game that if I was just like, well, the eye test, I would sound like an idiot. Like, I have to do the work. I have to do the research because I don't know if I'm looking at the correct thing.
Yeah, it's difficult, and we don't know exactly what the plays are for this team or that team. I have a good idea of what the Warriors run because they're the local team, and I watch every game. But there are a lot of teams where I don't know what they run. In the case of the Oklahoma City Thunder, it seems like whatever happens, happens.
It was like the D'Antoni system was always like, well, they're just going out and they're doing stuff. And then you would talk to players or you would hear players interviewed who actually played in the system. They're like, no, there's a method to it. There's like this – it's like – I think they described it, or maybe Grant Hill described it as like controlled chaos.
Yeah.
He was like, you know, it's controlled chaos. Whereas with the Thunder, it's just like, no, it's just chaos. There's no control to it at all.
Yeah, it's just whatever Westbrook and Durant decide to do, and they're so – devastating in transition. I mean, they murdered Indiana. Was it a week ago when they played them?
Yeah.
They just, oh, wait a second. Your greatest defense in years? It doesn't matter. None of it matters because we're just going to beat you back.
How much does that bother you because you were so anti-James Harden trade?
That's a good question, because they're doing incredibly well, and those guys that they got to replace him are performing better than people expected. So yeah, it seems like I'm gonna have to apologize.
That was, oh my god, that was such a backhanded way of complimenting them. You know, those guys they got, they're performing better than people expected.
It was not a backhanded way. He's gonna have the ultimate victory if they're so much better than we expected, and he knew something we didn't, then
yeah,
that's going to reflect well on him. But Jeremy Lamb, he's a player. He's good. Adams, not as good as he was at the beginning of the year, but he brings just a great defensive presence, and he can rebound, and he looks like he's going to be a solid role player who should already be stealing Perkins minutes. And insanely, they still have Perkins and Fisher out there. The Fisher thing is just it got absurd. It's like one of those jokes that it was so stupid it was funny, but then it was stupid again, but then it was funny again.
Yeah,
that's where I'm at with Derek Fisher still playing on the Thunder.
Yeah, it's if you had to be higher on one player out of Lamb and Adams, who would you take?
I would take... Oh, that is a great question. Oh, my God. That's such a great question. I would take Lamb. I like his energy and his athleticism. He's just so springy. That's another advanced stat.
I think I would take Adams, and I don't think it's close. Now, I've also been quite down on Lamb. I was never big on him as a prospect, and he is further ahead than I thought he would be at this point. I don't know how much I believe in his ceiling, but I know there are other people who are very smart at this that are very high on him. So I don't know if it's – I can't tell if I'm actually seeing problems or if I'm just being biased in this point. But I think I like Adams a lot more as a future role player.
Jonathan Tjarks. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. He's Jarks. All about the Lamb. Can I change my answer? I just remember that Adams is a lot taller. He's just a bigger human being.
He's officially, if you measured them back to back, you wouldn't even, like, the eye test, Adams is taller.
We haven't even talked about Reggie Jackson, who looks like an awesome third guard, and they're deep. They're the odd combination of young and deep, and Perry Jones, though, still sort of just wafts around the area.
I'm not a Perry Jones guy. I never was.
he sort of orbits the action.
Yeah, he's just checking things out. He's kind of like if you get in a group of sort of like socially inept dogs.
Oh God.
And they're all playing together. There will be the one dog, and my dog is actually this dog.
My dog's that dog too.
Where they'll circle and kind of yap at everybody, but they don't actually get involved. I feel like that's what Perry Jones is. I almost said Perry Ellis. I feel like that's what Perry Jones III is.
That's how my dog handles it. He's got that border collie thing, so he just sort of circles and doesn't get involved at all because I haven't socialized him well.
That doesn't sound like a defender to me.
Yeah, not. Hey, I think he's a good pickup defender, Zach, especially at the NBA level. It's so funny. We were talking about it tongue-in-cheek, and people actually think that I think a dog can play NBA defense. Can I just dispel that notion?
Wow, look at you just ruining dreams and fantasies for people. Why don't you just tell people Santa Claus is dead?
I might and I will, but... Yeah, I don't. That'd be a crazy thing to actually have happen. We were just having a little bit of fun with that. I don't necessarily need those tweets from people telling me that I think a dog can play NBA defense. I most certainly do not. I just like thinking about it. It's one of those things that
think about how absurd it is. Just the sentence you just said. Like we're a couple of people
I don't want to hear it, Zach. It's the smartest thing to be defensive about.
No. You and I amazingly are a couple of people that get paid to discuss basketball in some way, right?
Yeah.
And you just said you don't actually think a dog could play NBA defense. Like that is a sentence you said.
Hot take.
That's a scorching take. I just want to soak that moment in that you had.
Or would you enjoy First Take if that's what Bayless and Stephen A. Smith were debating?
Oh, I would watch. I would absolutely watch that.
Yeah,
and if it was Richard Sherman,
the passion Stephen A. Smith would bring to that argument.
Yeah, and if it was Richard Sherman of the Seahawks mediating it, oh, that'd be great.
It's fun to be weirdly emotional and on the crying about dogs playing defense. I would watch every episode of that. And not that I don't watch every episode of First Take because it's on ESPN and yeah, it's, you know, good programming and all that. But
you know what? Let me tell you about CSI Miami.
Oh, really? Yeah. Is that the show?
CSI Miami is a fantastic show, and another great show that I would recommend to people is the great Doug Gottlieb and the great Ali LaForce on Leadoff every night at, I believe, 11 p.m. Eastern. Just a beautiful show.
Great guy.
CBS Sports Network. You can go to CBSSportsNetwork.com and find your local channel for that.
Yeah, and I will. It's a great recommendation.
Yeah.
But on the Thunder, border collie or not, they seem to have enough to win it, coaching or not. So they're sort of a fascinating team that way. Maybe that's why people resent them and keep picking against them and keep trying to deny them the rightful place as the Western Conference favorite, because it almost seems as though it's unfair and it sends all the wrong messages if they go on to win.
Maybe. That's an interesting take. I feel like we've got like 10 minutes with you left.
Yeah, well, we could push it. We could push it to 15.
Do you want to rank the West in a contendery way, because that was something you wanted to do?
Yeah, I wanted to rank the West by title contendiness.
Okay, title contendiness. That's a good eye test term.
Yes, it's a good eye test. You can apply the sniff test, the smell test, the eye test,
yeah,
and maybe a hearing test, like a Petey Pablo track.
Ooh.
It always sounds like a hearing test when he's rapping to me in the back.
Yeah, okay.
The wheel, like that thing, you know?
Sure. I never really did hearing tests. I know I did one in school, but I don't know. That was never like a thing for me.
Well, the podcast serves as your ladder hearing test.
Yeah. Also, I've never had an eye exam pass like the second grade.
It sounds like your family deprived you, but that's a different topic for a different podcast.
No, I've got perfect vision. Like my vision, and even I stare at a computer screen like 28 hours out of the day, and my vision is as good as ever.
I don't even want to hear it. I just resent you already for it. I get so mad at Allie about this. She has perfect vision. I'll be stumbling around looking for my glasses because I can't find them because I don't have contacts. Why can't you find them? Because I can't see. You don't know what it's like.
All right, title contendiness in the West.
Okay. So I would go number one, Oklahoma City. Agree? Disagree?
I agree with that.
Number two is this is where the drop off is. I almost feel like if we're doing a tier, I would go Oklahoma City, and then that would be my tier.
Ooh, really?
More muddled. I know people want to slide San Antonio.
Oh,
in there.
You've got to.
Do you though?
Yes, absolutely.
I gotta say, your partner in crime, Matt Moore, did have a good point that they haven't had a signature win yet.
What does that even mean, though?
I don't know. It just means that they've beaten a bunch of bad teams and they've lost to good teams, and I don't know enough to know whether or not that's any sort of indicator of that matters. They do have a solid point differential. They just haven't really resoundingly beaten good teams.
They've only lost to good teams. I guess that's a good thing? A bad thing? I don't know. I don't understand what the issue is. They've taken care of business for the most part.
Am I crazy for wanting to put the Houston Rockets at second? I was in that locker room and I actually, it gave me far less confidence in what they'll be able to do, just because it was, I was so confident in their abilities going in because, yeah, you know, three-pointers, and they've fallen off in the offensive rebounding, but they can offensive rebound like crazy, you know. Threes and offensive rebounds and free throws all at the same time. It's kind of a crushing combination, and they have the capability of being much better at defense. They've just had some injuries. They've got that big trade piece. The only thing, and this is highly subjective, is that they're a very young team, a boisterous young team. And just being in the locker room, you got the sense that there wasn't a whole lot of maturity. Maybe it was Dwight Howard dancing and singing in his underwear. There are some other things, too.
Sure.
Where
that'll happen.
Where it just, this didn't seem like a title contender. There's a lot of bravado, you know. They're like a band of pirates, of marauders that
make
the Rockets locker room. But okay, San Antonio. I'm tempted to slide them out of there just because they've been kind of having a down year offensively from certain players, and I worry about them in matchups because so much of their defense is dependent on Tiago Splitter, and he can get forced off the floor against certain athletic opponents. The aforementioned Houston Rockets, if they were to play a playoff series against the Spurs today, I would pick the Rockets to win that series.
Oh, I take Spurs in six.
You take Spurs in six. That's perfectly valid because they're not as immature a team and they've been through this before.
Yeah, no, I think your top tier is Oklahoma City and the Spurs.
Yeah, I think most people would agree with that.
Yeah.
I just believe I put OKC above all. After that, do you go Portland? Do you go Portland already? Do you do it?
I would go Clippers and Rockets before Portland, but I think I would put Portland fifth.
Portland's confusing to me because you can say that their flaws, the defense, and a defense that bad doesn't really win titles, but at the same time, I kind of don't know what's wrong with their defense. They have the pieces to be a good defense. You know, they've Robin Lopez can be a really good defensive player. They've got size, so I know they're last in forcing turnovers, so maybe they have a deficit of athleticism. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, you won't be receptive to this idea, but I do think there's something to be said for the fact that Damian Lillard can't stay in front of anybody yet.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, that
Kyrie was Lillard got all the attention because he was a volcano, but Kyrie was having his way at the end of that game.
Yeah, and that I mean, Kyrie's good enough to where he does that about against just about any player. So, you know, that's not totally fair to say, well, Kyrie burned him. Like, Kyrie burns everybody. But I do think that it's just an initial breakdown in your defense that causes you to scramble more mm-hmm. often than not. And I think, and I believe in that impact being as important as just about anything on the floor defensively. Yeah. And Batum's just a weird defender because we all, for years, have looked at him and it's like, this guy's got to be a great defender, right? And he's good.
And he's just not. He's an excellent offensive player whose advanced stats don't reflect that necessarily.
Right.
But
and it's not. And I don't think he's a bad defender. I think he's good. I just don't know that he's the impact defender that we all assume he will be. And I think I keep waiting for that. Maybe that's why I have pause with their defenses. Those two aspects.
Yeah. Well. Okay. So my personal rankings. I'm just gonna do it. I'm just gonna be bold. I'm gonna go OKC. Houston, it doesn't feel right. It just feels wrong. San Antonio, then Clippers, and then Portland, thus enraging the Blazer fans who really want a whole lot of credit for this team. I understand it. It's a beautiful team to watch.
Yes.
And it's so well balanced. Favorite team to record right now. Their offense is so cool. They're using that mid-range game of Aldridge to open up other shots for other people. It's not just that people send help when Aldridge is on the block. It's also that his positioning for at that kind of long two area is perfect for picking off screeners as people are running in that circular pattern around him. He'll pick off defenders to open up three pointers for the other guys. I think it's such a cool design. I do love yeah. watching it. But
you know what it reminds me of, and it's not the same thing, but it's just like that kind of theory to me is that if you see a team going against a zone defense in the half court, you like the idea is get the ball into the middle of the floor and then you have so many options to pick them apart through movement and cutting and off ball screens and stuff. And yeah. not that they're getting him the ball in the middle of the floor, but because he's in that mid-range area, they just do so much with him that it feels like they're dissecting a zone.
Yeah. It's wonderful. I do worry with them, as I've worried a little bit publicly, he's not Dirk. And when teams guard him like Dirk, it was almost like the frustration of seeing teams double-team Dwight Howard back in the day where
right.
he's not Shaq. No, he's not Shaq. You don't need to do that. He's not Shaq in his prime. How about instead single-team him and just throw a whole ranch into their entire offense? That seems to be the better plan. And Atlanta finally did that when they bounced the Magic from the playoffs. And so I wonder if you're going to have that team that goes, you know what, we have a matchup disadvantage, maybe LaMarcus will go off for 40 points, but it's worth it to deny them the three-point looks, and we're going to go with it. And I wonder over the course of a series if that's going to happen, and that's my biggest doubt with them.
Yeah, I think for me, I accept how good they are now. I believe in them. I think I'm just curious to see how they would be treated in a seven-game series.
Yeah.
Because it is just, it's so different than the regular season. And I, and again, not doubting them, I'm just, I think I'm just more curious before I buy in.
Yeah. Lillard is such a, I was thinking today about, he's surging. He had that crazy game last night that he's so good at shooting the three off the dribble, as Kyrie is becoming too. And it's interesting, people thought that Curry might have been sui generis in that it was a good shot for him, and what we might be learning is that he sort of opened the window into how the NBA might look in the future.
Yes.
Where a lot of guys are going to be taking that three off the dribble because, hey, it's better than in many cases a long spot up two. He has that great step back game where it's almost like a long jump backwards, and but it's sort of hard to know what his trajectory is. It's almost, we kind of have an idea with other guys where John Wall, super athletic, so when he realizes that potential, he's going to be this. And somebody like Curry, it's sort of a Steve Nash trajectory. And with Lillard, he's kind of between things. It's kind of, he's not really a superior passer at that position. He's a decent athlete, but he's not necessarily a top-end athlete at that position.
Yeah.
And so he kind of falls through the cracks of our analysis and expectations.
Yeah, I think it's a matter of, because he's not like, I mean, he is strong. Like, he's unbelievably strong. He's probably one of the strongest point guards in the league. And that makes you think of, okay, well, Russell Westbrook, Derrick Rose, like, those are strong point guards. But he doesn't have that explosiveness, that like that crazy fast twitch explosiveness of those guys when they're healthy. And so, like, it makes you, like, knock him down a couple of pegs. But what if he just gets by on his strength all the time? Like, maybe that's just what it is, and he's always going to be strong enough to get whatever shot he needs. And from that point, I don't really know, like, does that make him, like a crazy good version of Sam Cassell?
I was thinking more Chauncey Billups.
Okay, yeah, I like that. Yeah, maybe he's just a quicker Chauncey Billups.
Yeah, he's a more athletic Chauncey Billups. That's a damn good thing to be.
Yeah, that's very good.
It's been interesting to see it shift, because he wasn't really putting up the numbers during this Portland stretch that would come with all the credit, and now people are kind of because this is what we do. We can't think of two things at once or three things at once.
Right.
So credit in the NBA redounds to one player, right, which – really, I understand why superstars can be selfish, and that they necessarily won't love the glory of winning, because we make it all about one person. The fact that Kobe won 5 rings is more important than that the Lakers won them, for instance. So you're sort of seeing the shift away from LaMarcus to Lillard on the heels of that game. He was sort of slumping before it. And so it'll be interesting to see how that goes, if it will be MVP talk for Lillard. And really what we have here is just a well-balanced team, and the addition of Lopez has been fantastic. I mean, he's been getting some monster offensive rebounds, and he's so good at finding their three-point shooters after he snatches it. So instead of maybe making it about one guy, we should recognize that they're just – it's like the offensive version of the Indiana Pacers last year, where – it's a bunch of guys contributing a whole lot.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. So you've got Thunder, Rockets, Spurs, Clippers, Blazers.
Yeah, and then the Warriors, and I'm probably just doing that thing where I'm not revealing how I truly feel, because I don't want to seem like a homer, and it's happening subconsciously.
Really, you've got the Warriors consciously. Really, you've got the Warriors one.
Yeah, I've got them written all over my Trapper Keeper with hearts. The Warriors, I don't know. I mean, their starting lineup, it really kills it. And Iguodala, as we've talked about earlier, compensates for what Lee takes away defensively. But their offense is underperforming, and I don't want to be a broken record on it, but I do believe they should go the route of embracing the four out, just because they almost need that spacing. Because for all, you know, however great Curry is at passing and finding his teammates, it helped Steve Nash a whole lot when they got that kind of spacing, when they went four out. It helps. If your point guard isn't especially fast, it's a damn good thing to get some extra space in there.
Well, okay, I don't really remember how that combination did. But I do feel like, since we're making the Nash comparison, then you think of the Suns.
Yeah.
In a way, like, let's just pretend Well, I guess David Lee would then be the Amari. I was trying to think of how the Amari Boris Diaw combination did together, because one of them was the attacker, the other one was like kind of a mid to high post passer. So I guess yes. Bogut would be more the Diaw presence yeah. there on offense. Like I don't, you know, it still was better with the four out, but I wonder can it be good enough with those two in those roles, which is weird to compare because it's not the same offense at all.
It can be good enough, but it lowers their ceiling. I could see it crashing and burning if they went four out, not working that well. But their ceiling would be higher, and that would make me feel better about their contenderiness.
Yeah,
you know?
Their contenderiness.
I would feel better about the higher ceiling, and even if the bench matters less than
yes.
it does in the regular season. So they do have some extra turbo button to use going forward, because they'll have to rely on that bench less. So I feel good about them. But if I'm being objective, you just have to slot them there right now. They've sustained too many injuries.
Yeah.
They made the brutal mistake of hiring a Wolves trainer.
This really bothers you. I should have never let that little information go your way.
I didn't really keep track of it until you mentioned it. It's supremely unfair because I don't know much about what they do. But
and he looks a lot like Kevin Love.
Maybe that's why he was hired in the first place.
Yeah.
But they just keep sustaining injuries, and the results aren't good. And all you can really judge these guys on are the results, since we don't know enough about what happens internally. So all those concerns aside, I think you got to slate them behind that. And then some sort of combination of Dallas, Minnesota, Denver, and however the order.
Okay, I agree with that. Actually, now that I think about it, I think I'm going to put the Warriors above the Blazers. I'll slide the Blazers to sixth, simply because
you're gonna get death threats. I pronounce death threats in weird syllables.
Yeah, right? that was a weird emphasis. I would say whatever. Like, this isn't it's not a knock on the Blazers. It's just I've seen what the Warriors can do in a playoff series, and I haven't seen with the Blazers. So I'll take the known over the unknown. Like, that's just kind of how I am with stuff. If the Blazers ended up being the third best team in the West, it would shock me a little bit, but I wouldn't be like blown away. It's simply more I'm taking what I feel is a known quantity over potential, and I'm fully prepared to have the potential slap me in the face.
Yeah, and I think that's smart. There's nothing wrong with doing that, with taking the known, especially with their sort of shaky defense. And there's this big people demand things of you when they win. People go, "You don't buy them yet? Still, you're still talking about the people are very triumphant on behalf of this team that nobody predicted would be good." People really have their chest puffed. A lot of people who aren't even in Portland have their chest puffed out quite far about a squad that they never said would be doing this before the season. It's a curious dynamic.
It is. Yeah, that's weird. I didn't think about that.
You've noticed that, right? I'm not crazy.
No. It's definitely, that's definitely the reaction. And it's a lot of, how can you not have LaMarcus Aldridge in the MVP conversation? I'm just like, I don't know. It's December. I don't have MVP conversations in December.
Don't think he's an MVP, and I'm thinking to myself, it's LaMarcus Aldridge. I'm sorry, but it's LaMarcus Aldridge.
Well, it's LeBron
James plays in this league. Not going to talk about LaMarcus Aldridge as an MVP candidate. I'm not going
to
do it.
To me, it's not. I'm not excluding Aldridge. I'm excluding the conversation.
Yeah, I just don't. I don't view it as a relevant thing to think or to feel. And then we have this whole, he's got to be in the conversation, and to me it seems as though it's a very needless conversation because one guy wins the award. What is this conversation?
Yeah, that was kind of the thing with Tony Parker the last couple of years, right? It's like, well, he has to be in the conversation for it. I'm like,
not really.
Well, I was like, yeah, he can be. I don't know what that does, though. Like, is there validation in your guy finishing fifth in voting instead of eighth?
Like, you can hang that banner.
Like, let's say the Wolves win 50 games. They just go on a crazy run. They win 52 games this year, and Kevin Love is averaging 25 and 15.
Yeah.
And he finishes fourth in MVP voting. I would be happy with it. I would love that. It sounds like a really fun season, but I don't know. I'd be like, yeah, see, he's really good. Like, I already know he's good.
Yeah.
Like Blazers fans already know LaMarcus Aldridge is awesome, right?
Yes.
So, I don't know. I guess the MVP conversation, if your guy's not going to win it, I don't understand it. Well, I mean, I understand it, but I don't. To me, it doesn't do anything. Like,
yeah, I get it.
Unless you're telling me Kevin Love's barely missing out in voting to LeBron James at the end of this year. If it's out, unless it's that situation, I'm just gonna be like, all right, he played really well. I already knew he was good. I already knew like the whole, oh, this guy can't, like, you could have gone last year with LaMarcus Aldridge and been like, see, they won 33 games. This guy can't lead a team to victory. And that's stupid.
Yeah.
That's really stupid. Like, your teammates matter so much, and he has so much, like, he has actual depth on his team. His team is so much better this year, and it accentuates how good he already is.
Well, the irony is that all these people before who were really discounting LaMarcus Aldridge based on the team performance with a, oh, he must not be that good because the team's not doing that well. Now that the team's doing well, they're really overcorrecting the other direction that he must have some great magical power.
Right. Well, you know what my favorite thing, I know you got to go really quick, but my favorite thing has been when someone tries to convince you that your team should trade its best player to their team.
Of course.
That if you don't like the trade idea, then they start ripping apart the guy that they're trying to trade for.
That's an interesting psychological dynamic.
We should probably dive into that next time. Yeah. But that is something that's fascinating.
Well, so we can begin that process. David Lee for Kevin Love. Who says no?
I think I just end the podcast on that, bro. Don't I?
Thanks for having me, man. We'll talk more in the future. I got to do this whole screencast dealy.
Yeah, thanks, Ethan.
Peace.